My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rachel Zoe, and you're listening to Climbing in Heels for your weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and of course, fun. Okay, I am joined today by the most incredible powerhouse that is Dr. Laura Devkin. Dr. Devkin is recognized as New York's number one female cosmetic surgeon and the mother to six children. Six. Yes, six. Do you know anyone with six children? Dr. Devkin's passion in how she practices cosmetics and reconstructive surgery is so deeply inspiring. The artistry and physiology that she has clearly mastered has transformed so many people's lives and instilled so much confidence in countless men and women. I cannot wait for you to hear this episode. It is so good. So let's get right into it. And I never do this. I want you to know that in the like year and a half that I've been doing Climbing in Heels, I've never once read a paragraph off something I got about someone's like bio. But this one is so mind-blowing that I think it's a great little intro. Okay. Dr. Devkin attended Yale College, Johns Hopkins Medical School, Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, Columbia, Cornell, New York Presbyterian Hospital, Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery, Residency and Fellowship, and obtained a coveted National Institutes of Health T32 Pre-Doctoral Clinical Research Fellowship to study surgical outcomes. Her surgical expertise spans cosmetic and reconstructive surgery, focusing on facial aesthetics, advanced body contouring, and complex reconstructive cases. As a respected attending surgeon at Lenox Hill Hospital, Greenwich Hospital, and Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Infirmary, Dr. Devkin not only practices, but also contributes to educating the next generation of plastic and reconstructive surgeons. And then it goes on and on. Recognized as New York's number one female cosmetic surgeon by RateMDs and featured in the New York Times, Forbes, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Guardian, UK, Vogue, Glamour, Allure, Town & Country, Elle, Marie Claire, and more, Dr. Devkin has also been named to America's top plastic surgeons. She's the founder and CEO of luxury medical grade skincare, which I use, Dr. Devkin Scientific Beauty, and the host of Beauty Boss's podcast. Dr. Devkin lives in Manhattan with her husband and children. So you're clearly a slacker. This is insane. You recognize that, right? You are a force of knowledge, accomplishment, and all the things that, like, I think are, like, the most insanely, like, thought to be unachievable by so many people as adults, as kids, as teens. Like, what is she human? And I know you, and you are so human and so lovely. And obviously so talented, but I need to talk to you a bit about this journey. I want to talk about it. So I need to know, first of all, where were you born and raised, and how and who were you as a child that you are this adult? Please explain how this happens.
Cool. Such an introduction. Oh my God. I grew up in LA. I grew up in Malibu, California and Santa Monica. And since I was little, my favorite things to do were drawing and painting. And so I grew up as a classically trained artist. When I was little, we lived up the road from the old Getty Villa in Malibu. And I used to take art classes there and I remember being a little kid and trying to splash in the fountains and drawing these Etruscan antiquities. And it was such an amazing way to appreciate creativity. And that it kind of became the underpinning for everything else after that.
And so you grew up, okay, so where did you go to school first? Like, where did you go to school in Malibu? Where did you go to school here?
I went to elementary school in Malibu at Webster Elementary. Yep. I think it's still around, I'm not sure. And then I did high school at Harvard Westlake in LA proper.
Yep, best private school in Los Angeles. Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
And even back then, it was a pressure cooker. I hear it's become a little bit more intense.
Yeah, but it is.
Yeah.
But okay, so then you go to Yale undergrad, right? Which, as we know, is an incredible school. But did you know, like, were you a kind of a girl that was like, I'm a girl, I can do anything boys can do. I don't, like, what kind of girl, what kind of student were you? Like, what kind of kid were you? Like, were you always an overachiever?
I was the kind of kid that I am as an adult.
Yeah.
I was like, I had that same energy that I have in the operating room, even when I was little. So I wonder if people, I know there are all these debates about nature and nurture, but I've been kind of a perfectionist since I was little.
Yeah.
I was a good student in school. I was obsessed with my cats when I was growing up. I would like have a whole little world with my cats. I loved math, science, writing, reading. I loved every academic discipline in school. And my siblings were a lot older, so they were kind of out of the house and already in college when I was growing up. And so I had a little bit more of an adult skewing worldview because I was hanging out with my parents all the time.
Got it. Okay. So that checks. And so were you, when you started school, were you like, I want to be a plastic surgeon? This is what I want to do. At what point?
Not at all. I went to Yale and I was an English major because I loved reading and I loved writing. I loved reading. I thought that there's nothing better than trying to find all the right words for all the complex, nuanced feelings. And I really continue to respect reading and writing so much. I always have been passionate about art and anatomy and as I evolved at Yale, I was very much a science kid as well. I was just a student kid. I have always loved learning,
like,
and I still like
learning. Yeah, of course.
And so I was always taking in everything. And so when I was in college, I made all these goals for myself. I was like, okay, I'm gonna read the complete works of Shakespeare. I'm gonna write so much stuff. I'm going to work in, there was a professor I really admired who passed away, Robert McNabb, but he was this prize-winning, really brilliant biochemist. And I worked in his biochemistry lab. I did clinical research with Michael Merson, who at the time was the dean of the Yale School of Public Health. And I just wanted to understand everything there was to understand so that I could figure out where I wanted to be. At one point in college, I got the opportunity to do an internship at the Aga Khan Hospital in Nairobi, Kenya, which is where my mom grew up. My mom is a native of Kenya. And so she grew up in Nairobi for most of her life. And I had the opportunity to go back there for a summer in college and intern at this hospital. And it was such an amazing, life-changing experience because there was so much disease burden and so much opportunity to help people who lived in a vastly different way. I was coming from the Ivy League, from, you know, a stable household in Southern California at all these educational institutions where everything looked so nice and perfect. And there was a lot of inequity. There was a lot of lack of access to health. There was very high prevalence of HIV and AIDS. Mm-hmm. And I was in a maternity ward in a hospital. And I think around that time, I began to think, you know, I love writing. I want to continue with the English major, but rather than describing the things that other people do, I want to do those things myself. And that led me to a career in medicine. And then I applied to medical school. The rest is history.
That's so wild. That is so, well, it's interesting because I think that's sort of this like fearlessness, I think, that comes in. Because when I think about it, like, I was a psychology major in college, right? I ended up in fashion. I would argue I use psychology every day of my life. And I would say that I couldn't be happier that I majored in it because I still am obsessed with the psychology. Yes. And, you know, it is something you really, I feel I really do use. I think in terms of practicing in medicine, that is something that you do, I think, flip this switch at some point and go, I want to be in it. I actually want to do it instead of researching it, instead of talking about it, instead of learning about it. You do all those things, obviously, constantly. But to me, that's the like jump. That's the like, I want my hands in this kind of thing. And so were you scared? Were you like, I always wonder, I think when it comes to jumping into an actual medical profession, like did you have any fears about entering it? Because I feel like at that time it was likely mostly male, was it?
Yeah, well, surgery continues to be mostly male. And by the time I got to medical school in 2002, mm-hmm. There were a lot of women in the class. I think it wasn't quite half and half, but it was getting there. Mm-hmm. But within surgical subspecialties, it was still extremely male dominated. When I got to medical school, I knew that I wanted to treat it like learning a language. Yeah. And that kind of desire I've had since I was a kid to learn as much as possible and take in everything about the world was 100-fold in medical school, because mm-hmm. the level of knowledge that you need to master of anatomy, physiology, pharmacology, disease, clinical medicine is encyclopedic. And during medical school, I thought I wanted to go into surgical oncology, which is an amazing field that involves surgery related to cancers of the body.
Yep.
And in those cases, when I was observing as, you know, a medical student assistant in the operating room, I found myself gravitating toward the ends of the cases, which at the end of the case is when the plastic surgery team comes in mm-hmm. and they reconstruct mm-hmm. the resected tissue deficit. So if the cancer team has taken away somebody's entire jawbone, mm-hmm. the plastic surgery team will come in and use the fibula, a bone of the leg, and do these delicate microvascular anastomoses under a microscope and create a new jaw out of the leg by, you know, just these mind-blowing, beautiful operations.
Insane.
Make a new breast out of your, you know, abdominal fatty tissue.
Right.
Exactly. Yes. It was so beautiful and interesting. And I thought to myself, this is what I need to do, because plastic and reconstructive surgery is, first of all, totally misunderstood in pop culture and the media.
Of course.
It seems like the most frivolous, stupid profession, but it's actually built out of people who at least at one point were extremely intellectual.
Yes.
And this is all age groups. This is men and women. This is age 0 to 100+. You have to be a master of all types of anatomy and physiology. You really have to understand artistry. And so that little kid part of me was also coming to the surface. And that's kind of how I ended up there.
That's so incredibly fascinating, because, you know, I would apply the same thing to fashion, right? So I had a crossroads in my career many times in fashion where I was like, this seems so superficial, this seems so this, this seems so that. And then I would get these like women coming up to me like, you changed my life, you made me get out of a depression, you made me come out of this, you made me want to feel like a woman again, you made me want to go to work again. And again, the psychology of what that process means. And to your point, you know, when I think about cosmetic and plastic surgery, for the longest time, it was reconstructive, because I have so many people in my life who have had to get reconstructive surgeries for cancer and various other things. And historically, that's what it meant, right? But to your point, I also want to touch on the importance of what you do on a cosmetic level for so many women, because I do think that the women that look like the best version of themselves in the most natural way, which is how I even found out about you in the first place, was that all these women, I'm like, you look incredibly, Dr. Devgan, Dr. Devgan, Dr. Devgan, Dr. Devgan. And it was like, who is Dr. Devgan? Because living in LA, and I was like, why don't I know this person? And then I went down the black hole and I like, obviously follow you. And I was like, oh my God, I need everything you do. And Like, I think what you do is enhance and capture the best thing about women. I think you help build confidence. And I think what you do is beautiful, to be honest. And so, but I do think, to your point, society and pop culture has taken this, for better or for worse, to a whole different place and has very different connotations with many people.
When it comes to ensuring your company has top-notch security practices, things can get complicated fast. Vanta automates compliance for ISO 27001 SOC 2 and more, saving you time and money. Unify your security program management and streamline security reviews with AI-powered security questionnaires. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, FlowHealth, and Quora use Vanta to build trust and improve security in real time. Access Vanta's free suite of resources to scale your governance, risk, and compliance program at vanta.com/special. That's vanta.com/special.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As we migrated more of our business to the cloud, we were seeing expenses go up, but we couldn't pinpoint the cause. It seemed less of a cloud, more of a fog. That's why we brought on Cloud Optimizer, and they saved the day.
Are you seeing your cloud hosting bills go up and you're not sure why? It's time to put Cloud Optimizer to work for you. Cloud Optimizer analyzes usage patterns, right-sizes resources, leverages discounts you may not be aware of, implements automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service.
With Cloud Optimizer, we have our spend under control, our company is more agile, profitable, and we're getting peak performance from our cloud.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Yes, I agree with that.
I totally agree with you. Plastic surgery is not even about how you look. It's about identity and confidence. And if I'm doing my job well, then any indication that I've even been present is not available to the viewer or the user.
Yes.
And the best, most beautiful, artistic, bespoke work slips into the background. So it's almost like fashion, where there is a bespoke couture element to it. And also, like fashion, plastic surgery has both form and function. So there is the reconstructive aspect of it that is a fundamental part of the backdrop of plastic surgery. And that's everything from cancer reconstruction, trauma reconstruction for facial bone, cleft lip and palate, congenital anomalies, all types of syndromes, burn surgery, hand surgery, tendon repairs, digit replantation, free tissue transfer. There's this huge functional part of it. Like if you're wearing a shirt, it has to cover the relevant parts. And and there's also form. Like, you know, you can save somebody's life, but have it not look good.
Of course.
Or you can make it the most beautiful fashion garment that you would ever want to wear, that's completely beautifully tailored and customized. All of the seams are in the background, and it looks like that person was born to wear it. And that's kind of the difference between good work and excellent work. When I came of age as a plastic surgeon, as you were alluding to before, it was a completely male-dominated field, very toxic work environments, this weird situation that currently exists where 90% of plastic surgeons are men, but yet 90% of patients are women. So that's this strange Pygmalion complex where men were like making their ideal Barbie doll in lab. And I just felt like, you know, what's missing is, what about people like me who are intelligent women of substance who also want to present the best selves to the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, wearing lipstick doesn't make you less smart. It doesn't take away your college degree or whatever. It doesn't make you an anti-intellectual if you want to wear a cute dress
look good.
Or look a... Yeah, if, you know, and I really think that that's part of the human condition. You know, ever since Narcissus looked at his puddle in the lake, we all have been trying to wear cool sneakers, work on our abs at the gym, color our gray hair, as I was talking about.
It's true.
And that's part of what makes humans human. And I think the moment you stop caring about how you project and present to the world is the moment when you stop caring about who you are.
I could not agree with that more. And I think it's okay to say that. And I think it's okay to be that. And I think, listen, it's all tied together, right? How we put ourselves out there, how we carry ourselves, it affects our emotional being. Like I always tell people the story when I had COVID a couple of years ago, I literally was isolated, locked in a bedroom for like 10 days, basically. I had a full like cat eye and lashes every single day and concealer because I just was like, yep, me, myself, and I in this room, but like, this is how I feel like me, you know?
Totally.
And I think that that is sort of, not everyone feels that way, but for me, that's how I feel. It's not for anybody. It's, you know, it's for me. And I think it's okay that we can wear these different hats. And I think that as women, like, it's funny, all my doctors are female. Anyone who touches my face is going to be a female. And like, and that's across the board. Anyone who touches my body is going to be a female too. Like all my doctors are female. And that's, and I love men, you know, I do. I love men. I'm not a men basher. I love men. Men have been very supportive of me. But I think at the end of the day, I would want a woman who understands my psychology and understands where I am and what I'm going through. And I think there's just this empathy that I think women have that, you know, I think that we get it. But I think, you know, how do you have 6 children? So explain this to me. I mean, I know how, but so you're one of the literally like the absolute most booked, busiest, hardest working, as just someone who is a working mom of 2, like how, please explain this to me, because you're obviously an incredible mother.
No, I never grew up thinking I was going to have a huge family. I'm the youngest of 4. My husband is 1 of 3. And so we kind of thought maybe that would be a reasonable number.
Right.
But, you know, I love my kids more than anything.
Of course,
they're
the best.
Really good kids.
Of course.
And it is the best. And that's just like kind of what life dealt us. After a while, we figured out how it was happening. So then we were able to. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm thinking about you going through all these years of school and practice. And I'm also considering you were probably pregnant for like 12 of those years, give or take, right? So like.
No, actually, I had my eldest son when I was a senior resident, when I was a chief resident. Yeah. And then all my other 5 kids I had as an attending. So I was more able to sort it out. But yeah, I have 4 sons. They're aged 12, 9-year-old twins, and 8. And then I have 2 daughters who are 7 and 5.
I mean, honestly, it's the dream.
Yeah, the cats are getting in there. They're doing a breakfast routine. They're helping with everything.
So tell me in your everyday life, like, do you just say, are you still sort of like, what's next? Or are you sort of like, I guess what I'm saying is, are you systematic in your approach to your career? Or do you just, because I'm very gut driven. I don't plan things at all. I'm very like what feels right in the moment, what's next when I feel like it's time to do something else. Are you sort of like, okay, by next year, I want to launch my next product line. By this time, I wanted to, or do you just like, are you just like, I'm good right now. I'm working on my products. Like, how does this brain of yours operate? Explain to me.
I like to always have projects going on. I think the least happy times in my life have been when I've not been busy. So I thrive on projects and building and busyness. So I like to plan stuff. Mm-hmm. Not everything is planned. I think the big unknown is always a factor.
Yeah.
And you know, I like being open to opportunities and just fun stuff that can come up here and there. Some of the most fun things I've done recently have just randomly come up out of nowhere, like our smoothie at Juice Press or our co-branded Casa Cipriani product. Yes. These are like organic things so that fun. Have happened in time. But I do like to have kind of a bimodal distribution of my thought where there's a short-term set of goals and a long-term set of goals. And you know that Aristotle line that excellence is not an act, but a habit, and mm-hmm. you are what you do. So I try to make sure that each day is a freestanding, successful day. Mm-hmm. But then I try to think about what's going to happen in the future. I mean, a lot of that is, it's really a fool's errand because we can't really plan the future. No, but I think it's fun to try.
Well, I love your product so much. They're so good, especially the lip plumper, by the way, I want to add. That is so good. Someone came over to do my makeup and I had it on and she was like, did you do your lips? And I was like, no, I literally just put this on 20 minutes ago. Literally 20 minutes ago. She had seen me like two days before.
It looks like a syringe filler.
Yes.
No, literally it looks like a syringe filler. I've put myself out of business a little bit by making such a lip.
Well.
But it's all.
I want to talk about that for a second. I just do want to touch on, because listen, I mean, being in full disclosure, not everybody can afford to come see the Queen, Dr. Devkin. So what is your advice for women all over the country, all over the world that are like, I dream to come see her. I can't necessarily come get treatment from her, but I want to look better. What can I do? Do you have tips and tricks?
There's some very easy, super inexpensive, even free things that you can do on a daily basis, besides just the stuff your mom told you to do, like right. wear sunscreen and don't drink, don't smoke, wear right. sunscreen.
But we have to live.
But you have to live a little, so whatever that means to you. Mm-hmm. I think you can, first of all, right away, try to sleep on your back, because if you get positional wrinkles,
I do,
by compressing one side of your face, that's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. I think another good tip is to try to stay physically active, because particularly like for our generation and as people age, if your muscle mass decreases, then that will have an impact on your bone density and osteopenia and osteoporosis. So it's funny. I watched this video. It was an interview of like a dozen women in their 60s and 70s. And the question is, what advice would you give to your younger self? And all of them said, almost all of them said, build more bone density. Mm. And I thought about this, like, well, that is salient. So thinking about stuff like regular exercise, and not just for vanity, not just so you can get an acute dress, but so that you can have muscle mass and strong bones, because that will impact your attractiveness as well as your health.
Right.
And longevity. So, you know, as we age, the facial bone structure shrinks, particularly if you have a low degree of bone density. So if you have more osteoclast than osteoblast activity, then you're going to have more loss of the facial skeleton. Then there's other stuff like, you know, using medical grade skincare, vitamin C, BE, ferulic serum, retinol, bakuchiol, peptide-based eye cream, a mixed molecular weight hyaluronic with niacinamide. These ingredients can improve skin quality, because even if you can't go get Botox and lasers and all that stuff every 3 or 4 months, this is almost like the equivalent of brushing your teeth every day so that you don't need to go get your teeth whitened.
Right.
So that like mini level of resurfacing. So those are some of my more esoteric tips about how to age in a healthful way.
And I also, the other thing I do want to point out is I think one of the things I admire about your work the most is like, yes, of course, you do every kind of surgical procedure and whatever, but I do love how you always present these alternative, like non-surgical procedures that really are like face changing, like the little magic you do to noses and like all these jaw things and all these magical things that you have like figured out how to do. It's unreal.
That's the future of beauty. The future of plastic surgery to me is using the most invasive surgical anatomy, but using less invasive, non-surgical, smaller, less invasive modalities to achieve it. So you kind of need to marry both in order to push the envelope. But things, little developments like non-surgical rhinoplasty, I think that's the most important cosmetic surgery concept during my lifetime.
Because I agree.
That's going to take literally millions of people out of the operating room.
I agree.
And that's incredibly powerful. Just the act of using micro droplet hyaluronic acid as if it were a surgical cartilage graft with the mind and eye of a real board certified plastic surgeon, you can make very powerful changes to the face. So I think part of that is what we were talking about earlier, which is just openness to ideas, being ready to not shy away from change and progress, but continuing to be aware, continuing to read articles, do research, make progress.
Okay, so my closing question, because I don't want to take your whole day. It's interesting. I have a lot of people that wanted me to ask you this question because there's a huge controversy about it. I kind of have a feeling how you're going to answer it, but I'm still going to ask you. There's a big debate about what age you should have facelifts or things done like that, right? Are you asked this at least once a day?
Yes.
And so there's this conversation lately in Los Angeles going around like, I've already missed the boat. I'm too old. Apparently I was supposed to get it in my 30s or my 40s or whatever. My response to that was like, well, it depends on your face, but I want to hear from the queen. So please share your thoughts on this.
So this is a really important and frequently asked question. Okay. I think that the trend is toward smaller, more finesse surgical procedures at younger ages.
Right.
And that's for four main reasons. I think first, it can be a more discrete outcome. So less of a delta between the before and the after.
Right.
Second, you're going to have a better healing propensity because your molecules and cells will be younger and fresher and more able to heal an incision.
Yep.
Third, you'll be able to have a smaller scar. And fourth, you're going to have more quality adjusted life years to enjoy that outcome. So that's kind of how people are generally thinking about things. However, not every nail requires the same kind of hammer. And so some people can be very happy delaying deferring completely surgery. And I think that's part of what modern beauty means. It means the permission to be your own kind of beautiful. You don't have to shove it down someone's throat to like go have a surgery. As a plastic surgeon, the way I think about these things is when you have more than a centimeter of pinchable laxity in the neck, the jowl, or the midface, or to put it another way, whenever you're dying to subtract, typically subtraction is the domain of surgery. addition can be done surgically and non-surgically, but they're not that many ways to subtract without surgery.
Right. Understood. Understood. Okay. And what would you say is the procedure you've done most throughout your career? Is there one?
Surgically, I do a lot of face and eye surgery. So like facelift, neck lift, blepharoplasty, little finesse procedures of the face, and also some kind of hidden secret plastic surgery procedures like temporal brow lift and lip lift and, you know, all those little things. And then non-surgically, I do a lot of this term of art that I invented about a decade ago of global facial optimization, which is things like profile balancing with non-surgical rhinoplasty and chin augmentation, giving the face greater symmetry with cheekbone and jawline augmentation, little finesse procedures that are designed to keep somebody's identity, but optimize the way they look.
I want to move in with you. I feel like if I do that, I feel like if I do that, I'll just wake up like,
yeah, with all the kids and cats, we would like probably not even notice.
Well, you know, I wish I had more kids. So six kids does not scare me. I love it. I want kids, not so much the cats, but I would love the new face and all the kids. I'd be so happy. I love having you, Laura. You are brilliant. You are so beyond impressive. You're so beautiful. You're so sweet. You're so smart. All the things. I can't wait to jump into your office. I can't wait.
I can't wait to see you so soon. It was so fun chatting with you. And I think that you're somebody who has done so much to really move the needle on fashion and how everybody integrates little decisions into their daily life with their personal style. And I really adore all the stuff that you've done.
Well, right back at you. I loved having you. This was so much fun. And keep like working your magic on everyone, because I mean, we're all just in line. Thank you so much to Dr. Devgan for being on the pod. At first thought, I mean, you think cosmetic surgery just seems like, oh my God, it's the thing everybody gets to transform their face and look this and have the perfect jawline and the cheekbone and whatever. But I was so blown away by Dr. Devgan's ability to break down how plastic surgery is really about building your confidence, gaining your sort of true identity and your just overall how you feel about yourself every day and your confidence, and not just about how you look on the outside. I don't know, this episode was one of my favorites. I literally could have asked her like 70,000 more questions, because I think the topic of cosmetic surgery, I'm pretty sure I don't go a day without hearing someone talk about it on some level. And I think it's this massive umbrella that is dominating pop culture in so many ways. And I think it can be very detrimental, but I think that Dr. Devgan's approach to it is just so, I don't know, she's so gifted, she's so talented, she's so natural, she's so effortless. If you could see the women that I know that she works with, they don't look like they've done a thing. They just look absolutely beautiful and like the absolute best version of themselves. So thank you so much for listening to Climbing in Heels. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the iHeart app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't miss a single episode this season. And follow the show at Climbing in Heels Pod for the latest episodes and updates. I will talk to you soon. Mwah.